Yes, there's been draws. What if moments, poor Lachie O'Brien and Blake Akers, the MCG turf, players slipping, bumps, collisions, MRO outrage, the Power are good, the Hawks are bad. What to make of the Dogs and Lions? Cozzie, Parrish, the McGoverns all performing, but where will they be next year? And Glenn Bartlett breaks his silence. Yes, it's been a massive round one, and welcome to the Footy Podcast. I'm your host, Will Hogan. On the show today, we will talk the big issues, trade, and of course, we will take a walk down Media Street. But that's enough from me. Now let's get into it with Mark Robinson. Robbo, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, William.
Now, a big story has dropped on Tuesday in today's Herald Sun. Glenn Bartlett speaking for the very first time since departing as a Melbourne president and on the board. Robbo, you broke this story. You spoke to him. Tell us about how it came about.
How did it come about? Well, colleague Mickey Warner got some legal documents last week or the week before about some impending court action against some media outlets and journalists. And from there, Bartlett decided he wanted to talk for the first time about his experience, his emotional highs and lows, a lot of lows. His partner Vicky and the effect of what happened at Melbourne in the lead up to his departure from Melbourne. Exactly what happened. He was getting, his words, just so tired of the attacks on him that year, and he's now in the throes of, wanting to get a court case. And I was told he wanted to speak to me, so I spoke to him and turned it into part one today, Bartlett and his dealings with the AFL, and part two, which will be going in Wednesday's Herald Sun, will be Bartlett and his final days and months at Melbourne.
It's obviously for him personally, by reading this, you can tell he's had a harrowing 18 months, the departure and all that, and to now put himself through an interview, it must have been tough. From your point of view, how was he doing this?
Oh, I got distressed a couple of times through the interview, no doubt. It was a lot of things were just flooding back to him. He got distressed, of course, when you spoke about Victoria, his partner's attempted suicide. He got very distressed. Of course he would. I mean, we're talking about a game of football. This is a game of football. And here he is, a Melbourne president who was there for 8 years, talking about his partner trying to kill herself. I mean, sometimes it's hard to marry the two, that you can go from a sport to such a potential tragedy. So there was a lot in his mind. We spoke for a long time. Not all of it can make the paper. There's some legal issues around. But it felt like, no, so I can't say it felt like, I'll say that he said a bit of weight was lifted off his shoulders. He wanted people to know his side of the story. Now, there will be probably people at the AFL and people at Melbourne who will dispute his version of events. And I said that to him. He said, well, it's all in the affidavits. We'll hear it all in court. So he's at this stage determined to go to court.
And so from there, what happens now?
What happens now?
It's going to get murkier?
If the affidavit, they've got some affidavits, and if the information in those affidavits get out, it'll absolutely not take it murkier. It'll get more pointed.
Yeah.
Because there'll be evidence. His evidence will get out, and there will be text messages from all kinds of people, AFL personnel, senior personnel at Melbourne, players possibly. He's got text messages. So right now, anyone involved with the departure of Glenn Bartlett from Melbourne, they all might believe that they've done the right, it was the right thing to do at the time.
Yeah.
They can all possibly believe that. But if they've sent text messages and shared emails or memos or whatever you want to call it, that will all come to light. You reckon it'll get murkier then? No one wants text messages shared.
No, I know you don't like to be too self-indulgent, but the listeners do like to know how these things happen and pulling back the curtain a little bit on journalism. From your point of view, when you are doing a big interview with a controversial subject in Glenn Bartlett, given his ties with Melbourne and the AFL, from your point of view, how does writing this story make you feel when this does go public and it does have the wavelengths that it does?
The wavelengths. Well, you know it's big when you're doing the interview. I mean, don't worry about writing it. You know it's big when you're sitting down and you're talking to a person who is criticising and telling stories about Richard Goyder, the AFL Commission Chairman, Gil McLachlan, the CEO, who I know pretty well. I've been chief, well, he's been chief for the decade, so I've worked really, not so closely with Gil. I've been associated with Gil a lot of times. We've done a lot of interviews. He's appeared on 360 several times a year. I've got a really good relationship with Gil, and here I am interviewing the person saying that Gil's been working for 18 months with Gary Peart on the behavioural concerns for coach Simon Goodwin. So you know it's a big story. Now, I'm a football writer. People would argue that this is not a football story. But Glenn Bartlett, as president of Melbourne for 8 years, dealing with the coach and the board, is a football story. Now, not to make it even more complex, but he's got a story to tell. Everyone is allowed to tell a story, their story, if they want to do it. Oh, I'm sorry, Glenn, I can't talk to you. It's going to upset Gil. It's going to upset the AFL. It's going to upset the people I know at Melbourne. You've got to park. That's got to be parked. It's got to be parked. You've got to do your job. And I'm sure there's going to be people at Melbourne, the AFL, are going to be really pissed off.
Is it hard to compartmentalise that side of things?
Hard. Is it hard? You've got to park it. Whether it's hard or not, you've got to park it. Because you've got to do your job. And sometimes you've got to do your job knowing people are going to get upset. And that's the hard bit, right? You're going to possibly hurt people. And what, do you think I wasn't sitting there writing it and thinking, not thinking how Simon Goodwin going to feel about this? Of course I was thinking that. You know, he's got kids. You know, these are the things you wrestle with. And people could say you're an arsehole for writing it. All I'm doing is writing it. Glenn Bartlett, and then you've got to go back to what you believe in life. Glenn Bartlett's got every right to tell his side of the story. You can't say, no, sorry, it's going to upset people. I can't do it. So, yeah, I did it. It took a long time. It took a long time. The result was today. Feedback's been interesting. And we'll see what happens tomorrow.
And the games this week are going to be good as well. You've got Collingwood, Port, Carlton, Geelong, Melbourne, Brisbane. They're everywhere. There's storylines everywhere.
That Saturday afternoon game at the MCG, Port v Collingwood.
Two of the most exciting teams from round one. Who do you pick? Just quickly.
Collingwood.
And I did notice with AFL 360 on Monday night, you did go hard at Ken on tagging Nick Dacos.
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt that Nick Dacos. See, it's every team's got weapons, right? What are their weapons? And if you've got a weapon, you've got to stop it. And what Collingwood have got, and Josh is part of it, his brother, but Nick's the one. He's got two things going for him. He's got a lot of things going for him, but he's got two special things. One's called his right foot.
Yep.
And the other one's called his brain. Mm. And what Nick does, he is able to see the game unfold for a young fella. So when he's got the ball, anything's, because he's so talented in his right foot, anything's capable. Any kick is capable. He can go long to a person running into space. He can go short to a person leading through the middle. He can go short with a guy cutting across the middle. He can go long out wide. He can go to the half forward flank, short, long, wide. He can do it. When that happens, when you've got a teammate who is so potent with what Nick does, what that means is every other teammate moves quicker than what the opposition movement, because their thought patterns are, I'm running. I'm running into a space. I'm going to create, and Nick delivers. Not all the time. He had 20-odd kicks on the weekend and went at 91% accuracy. 91. Incredible. The average is about, I think the average is about 62. Right?
He just doesn't miss.
He doesn't miss. So what that does, that sets up Collingwood's thing. And Josh has got a beautiful right foot as well. You know, I was half serious, you know. The game always evolves. Oh, team defence. No. Team defence isn't going to stop Nick Dacos because that gives him space.
Yeah.
He can't have space. He needs someone pressuring him so that brilliant mind of his hasn't got time to evaluate what is going on about him so then he can pick the right option which sends Collingwood running. They've got to close down that time. So I said to Kenny, who are you playing on him? And Kenny said, oh, we might go head-to-head with him. I said, no, you won't.
He didn't bite.
Go head-to-head with him.
I agree.
I'm not a coach, but it would be a foolish coaching group to say, oh, I tell you what we'll do. We'll put someone on Nick who threatens Nick. Okay. What do you say? We'll get
Junior Rioli.
We'll get him taking back to the square. I'll say, well, Nick's not going. Nick's down at halfback flank. Someone else can pick up Junior Rioli.
Yeah.
This is how good the Collingwood defence is. As if they're going to allow Nick Dacos to go deep. Righto. They all just look around. Who's in charge? They're all in charge. Maynard. Moore. They're all in charge. Right. You got him. You got him. No worries. You stay there, Nick. And guess what? They give him the ball. He's a very, very, very powerful influence on the Collingwood Football Club.
No, I agree.
But so Jason Horne-Francis winning the same draft. I'll be honest, that was the best I'd seen him play on the weekend.
Amazing. His power. Thought,
wow.
A good get.
Oh, as Kenny says, he was number one. So we all don't have to say he's a good player, but the way he impacted the game on the weekend in his second season, we might be seeing something very, very special. So on Saturday, we got Horne Francis, not V Nick Dacos, but in the same game.
Two headline acts.
We have got two special young talents. Right, headlining. They're two teams. Can't wait.
Robbo, thanks for joining us.
No worries, Will. Talk to you another time.
I'm Andrew Rule. I try to shine a light in dark places and tell honest stories about dishonest people. If you like sunny stories about shady folks, join me for my podcast, Life and Crimes. It's available from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your fix.
Now it's time to talk trade, and why not have none other than John Ralph. Ralphie, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you, Will.
Now, it's a big year. It's always a big year in trade. It starts now. I've heard it. I heard it started last year. It starts October 1, blah, blah, blah. But what does it mean now? What's the big issues heading into trade right now?
The big issue right now is the Victorian clubs have got a $10 million war chest. And so often before, players have been keen to move and clubs have been keen to acquire players. They just haven't got cap space. And so if you look at even the Victorian clubs, Essendon's got $3 million in a war chest. Hawthorn's got, you know, $2-3 million. North Melbourne's got to be $3 million. Who else are they playing? You know, paying. It can't just be Griffin Logue. And St Kilda, you know, have to have a significant cap space as well. Even the non-Victorians, GWS, finally got cap space for the first time. Sydney got cap space looking for acquisitions, maybe a De Koning type, Adelaide and Port. And so what that means is we could have that volcanic player movement that we want. Now, there's not a million absolute stars out of contract. It's not an amazing free agency year, but you just get the feeling it's that kind of year where clubs are going right now in round one, two players are in contract and they say, what will it take for you to come across to our club? I just love that that capacity for clubs to get inventive. And there's a lot of clubs down there, Essendon, Hawthorn, St Kilda, North Melbourne, who aren't looking for 28-year-old free agents at $800,000, but they might be prepared to pay, you know, significant money for a 23 or 24-year-old bloke in his prime who they believe can build with them in that premiership window.
So we've heard some of the names already, you know, the likes of McGovern's, Mackay's, these sort of players. But if clubs do have this amount of money, what does that mean? You're saying they could be inventive. What does that actually mean? Can they hold off and try again next year when there could be better players enticing. But what do you think will happen?
I think they're looking for players underneath the 25-year age bracket. But it's why a player like Kozai Pickett or a player like Tom De Koning is probably going to get about $600,000 or $700,000 at their clubs. But is there a club out there that will say they are, you know, they are going to play 10 years of football with us? We're prepared to pay them $900,000 over the next 8 years. So call it a $7 million contract. Call it a something that is going to be so big that it's going to rip them out of their existing club. So Carlton, for instance, they can pay about $600,000 for Tom De Koning. They believe they've only got, you know, $1 million player, can only afford to have $1 million player on their books. Sam Walsh, $800,000. You know, Kerno and Mackay, we don't know how much they are, but if they're not on $900,000, it's, you know, they're being underpaid. Sam Doherty's probably on $650,000. We know that Paddy Cripps is up near $1 million. And so if you're looking at Carlton, you can see they're vulnerable. You know, they've been able to pay significant money to their stars. They've also overpaid for players like McGovern, who's out of contract this year, but also Zach Williams, who's on $800,000. So you look at all of that cash, you look at all the stars they've acquired. If I'm Sydney, I'm thinking, we offer Tom De Koning $750,000, he's staying. We offer him $950,000, that might get him out. And in 2 or 3 years, when the CBA has gone up 10 or 15%, it might look like a really canny acquisition.
So what you're saying is that Tom De Koning will get could get $400,000 more not to play at Carlton.
No doubt about that. Yeah, and
so how does he not leave then?
I think Tom De Koning is going to have to make a multi-million-dollar sacrifice in guaranteed money to stay at Carlton. Now, let's look at what his brother was able to do at Geelong. Now, same manager, Robbie D'Orazio, he signed a 2-year deal coming off a huge breakout season with proven form, not just potential. And he will get very rich within a couple of years. He's probably well paid. You know, guesstimate, what would it be? $500,000 or $600,000. But if you're Tom De Koning, I'm signing a 2-year deal worth $600,000 at Carlton. And then when the big money comes off, you know, the Jack Martin money, the McGovern money, the Zach Williams money, he goes and signs that deal worth $900,000. It's proven form. If he stays at Carlton, wins premierships at Carlton, he's going to be a very rich boy. But he's going to have to sacrifice significant money up front for that. And we all know right now that players can get injured. You know, that is a leap of faith for Tom De Koning, but that's why he's got a really smart manager in Robbie D'Orazio, who will assess the whole landscape, put talks off until late into the year. I still think he wants to stay, but it's a matter of how much he wants to sacrifice.
And just one last one on him. So fans will say that Tom De Koning's not a $1 million player. He's just not worth that. He hasn't shown that. But did fans now need to realise that it's not just based on kicks and handballs? There is a changing market on how players are valued based on, as you say, how much money and cap clubs actually have.
It's also the multi-positional, you know, role they can play. I mean, you look at Mitch Georgiadis, 37 goals in his first year, you know, quieter last year, okay on the weekend. But clubs will look at him and also Tom De Koning as players. Well, Tom De Koning can play ruck, can play as that second forward. So if it's at St Kilda, you can help out Rowan Marshall, who was so good on the weekend. You can also be the foil there for Max King. Now, Tim Bramby's got a couple of years left. If you're Mitch Georgiadis, you're not the star. You're not the absolute megastar there. But at Essendon, you play alongside Peter Wright and Harry Jones and, you know, maybe a couple of others, whether it's Kane Baldwin. At St Kilda, same thing. You're playing alongside Max King. At Hawthorn, you're playing alongside Mitch Lewis. You know, you get that. It's not Ruffy and Franklin, but it's two key forwards who can play different roles, who can be adaptable. One can go to the square, one can push out. And so that's why players like Mitch Georgiadis and Tom De Koning will get rich, even though they're not necessarily the Charlie Kerno, single key forward capable of kicking you 70 goals a year.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I guess two names that we'll probably be talking about every week is Ben Mackay and Darcy Parrish. Now, one didn't play on the weekend, one did. What does their performances and their role in the team, how will that associate their value come, you know, October trade period?
Well, Parrish is someone that Essendon will really want to keep because he's 25 years of age. They would believe that he can grow with them in that premiership window. But again, if you lost him, you know, they have brought in, you know, Satsis and obviously Hobbs, and we believe they've got some depth in their midfield. I think we still believe they're going to finish bottom six. And so again, that compensation, someone might pay him, you know, $800,000 over 5 years. You get the compensation pick. I think we still believe they need more elite talent. So you want to keep him, but you're not that fussed if he necessarily leaves. Ben Mackay is so intriguing. I've thought he could be the best intercept defender in the game.
Yeah.
But when you look at his career, has he played 12 great games? Has he played 20 great games? How many great games has he played in his career?
Well, I think that's a little bit harsh. I think he does have that potential still. And I know what you're saying.
I've been 1A in his fan club. I just, again, he's out for, let's face it, what is it, 4, 6, 8 weeks with a foot issue. So the point...
Injuries are an issue with him.
Injuries an issue. So the point for them is they want to keep him. They won't probably pay insane money for him, but he's probably an $800,000 player over the next 5 years. But they move him on, or he gets moved on as a free agent. Jay Clark's talked about Port Adelaide. Other clubs are interested. You know, they'll probably get a top five pick. I think we still feel the North Melbourne's a bottom five side, even though they were so good against West Coast. So, yeah, it's taken them losing, you know, the number one pick, of course, and trading in. But George Wardlaw might play as early as this weekend at some level, and we know she's a Wardlaw. And then, of course, you get, you know, let's call it pick three and pick four in an absolute super draft. We're already talking about Harley Reid, but the depth in that top 10 is insane. So that's how you actually build a premiership model, by getting, you know, multiple early picks in the draft. And maybe, you know, he comes in and he plays, Mackay plays the seven best years you've ever seen. Mm. But maybe he just becomes that really frustrating player that just can't get out there. I mean, that's why they can't lose either way.
So you're talking similar, both Parrish and Mackay, around that $800,000 mark.
Yep.
Does that mean Essendon could get an early pick as well for Parrish?
Yep. I mean, they're not as secret, those herbs and spices, as they once were. You know, that the AFL lines up all of those contracts, and I think you have to be in the top 5% of paid players in any given year to trigger first-round compensation. But, yeah, I mean, if someone's getting Parrish, if someone's dragging him out, he's earning $800,000 elsewhere.
But they have the money for him, though, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I suppose the question can be with Essendon. He loves what Brad Scott's doing. They clearly show that they've got some upside. So I still think the very likely outcome is that Parrish stays at the club. But again, you know, they can't lose. Mason Redmond's really intriguing.
Mm.
So the start of last year, he's an underperforming, you know, third defender. Is he an intercept marker? Is he a good kick? He finished fourth in the best and fairest, kicks a couple of goals. He's a bit of a cult figure.
He is. They love him.
Great intercept marker. Probably even gets better if they bring in, say, a Ben Mackay type. He was probably a $400,000 player at most at the start of last year.
Yep, I could agree with that.
He's a free agent. The intercept markers are getting rich. You know, he's not Darcy Moore or Jeremy McGovern or Alex Rance.
He's got run as well.
Yeah, but in the modern game, you want to press up and you want to try and get those forward half turnovers. But if not on the last line, you want that bloke who's able to turn the ball over. Is he a $700,000 player as a free agent? You know, is he a better player than Dan McStay? He got $600,000 a year. They're the kind of comparisons list managers are talking about. So, I don't know, what would Essendon offer him? 4 years at $550 to stay?
Yeah, that's about fair.
Would someone say, look, he's in the peak of his powers, you know, we can play him, you know, alongside our superstar fullback. You know, he gets the ball off others. Is he a $700,000 player? Someone's going to offer him crazy money when you consider that so many clubs have got cap space to burn.
If you're Essendon, just quickly, would you rather keep Parrish or Redmond?
Probably Parrish, because he's still 25 and he's still an elite inside midfielder.
37 on the weekend.
Yeah, and he's got, you know, 3 years or 2.5 years of good form.
But they've got room for both.
Yeah, and again, it gives them options, which is so exciting for Brad Scott and their list manager, Adrian Dodoro, who we know and love.
Now, just one last one before we go. Nat Fyfe, you put him on the agenda in Tuesday's Herald Sun. He didn't really play very well. We get that. But could there actually be a chance where he leaves Fremantle?
Well, when you're on a podcast, you don't say he didn't play very well. You say it was the worst game of his AFL career.
Well, that's what the West Australian said.
They did. I've checked in again. I think he was very aware of the fact that he might play ordinary football. It hasn't changed, you know, in the first 4 or 6 weeks. You know, he'll just find his time to acclimatise to playing key forward. Nothing has changed in terms of the management situation. You know, he's going to play for 6 or 8 weeks and then they'll consider his contract. I just think that if you're Nathan Fyfe, you're thinking, I could retire by the end of the season, by the end of next season, 2024. You know, if I keep playing this key position role, I could get pushed out. You know, they don't want to play me midfield. They played Luke Jackson as a midfielder more than me. I just think that he should postpone those contract talks. He's an unrestricted free agent. The cap space that St Kilda that they might acquire might allow them to get into the lottery for Cozzy Pickett. Are the takers for him? That's the question. You know, you'd have to be a premiership window club. But then again, I look at St Kilda. Ross Lyon's getting the band back together. He's getting every bloke he knows and loves back to Moorabbin. I mean, why wouldn't he get Nat Fyfe, who he has such a strong and rich association with? It allows Gresham to play forward a bit. He's a bash and crash midfielder. He institutes elite standards. The Dan Hannabury experiment failed. You know, Zach Jones and the experiment there is on life support. I just think, you know, Ross the Boss and Nathan Fyfe, it has a ring to it.
Trade theories, we love it. Thank you once again for joining us. We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Cheers, Will.
I'm Andrew Rule. I try to shine a light in dark places and tell honest stories about dishonest people. If you like sunny stories about shady folks, join me for my podcast, Life and Crimes. It's available from Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your fix.
Well, now it's time to take a walk down Media Street, and I've got Scott Gallen with me. Scott, how are you going?
Hello, Will. Wonderful to be back.
Oh, you were pretty good last week. Good feedback.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
So, I know better than that, but yeah, continue.
So we're just going to get you back in, maybe not next week, just depends on what
you provide. We're going to mix it up. I was the staple of this wonderful podcast.
Well, it's based on performance, so anyway, we'll judge that then.
Okay, Hutch. I mean, Will, yeah.
Oh, very good. So what I would say is that you've just dropped another big bomb on Tuesday Media Street.
Special edition.
Luke Darcy and Peter Dutton?
They're besties.
Explain.
If people didn't know, well, our sources, and we have many in this building, and reached us, our ears, I'll include you in this, you were part of the sources.
Well, keep me out of this.
No, I'm putting you under the bus. Imperial Hotel last week
good when pub.
Peter Dutton, the opposition leader, was in town. Him and Luke Darcy were caught in in-depth conversation, having a drink and a laugh, being very happy with each other's work. Now, I must preface this. It's not the first time their relationship has been made public.
Right.
It was raised by his Triple M mates last year when they found out there was a little bit going on. Anyway, Darce, yeah, seen at the Imperial Hotel. So we tracked down and got to the bottom of it.
As you do as a journalist.
Because of the Sam Groth thing, this is why it's interesting. Course. Sam Groth, as we know, tennis player, got handballed into the seat of Nepean and won easily at the state election.
Landslide.
Against sort of the odds, obviously, for the Liberals. So here's the Liberal leader with a high-profile anti-Dan man is Luke, as we know.
Yep, famous radio
takedown of the Premier, and his family had a lot to do with hospitality, and we know what happened in COVID. So ticks a lot of boxes. But apparently the Mail is, no, not interested, maybe for now. Good mates, they have a mutual friend, they catch up regularly when Dutton's in town. Maybe it gets talked about, maybe it doesn't. But for now, Luke's not going into Parliament, but the relationship is a very healthy one, and he says it's all above board. I'm sure others will have some fun with it.
It was interesting, though, the Imperial, correct me if I'm wrong, is very close to Parliament.
It's across the road, correct.
Where Dutton would have been, you know, meeting John Pesciuto, Victorian MP.
I don't think Dutts can go too far around Melbourne, so he sort of said, let's catch up behind across the road. Yeah, I don't think they were hiding it as such. I mean, I think he was aware that a lot of journos and other types go to the Imperial, so you're going to get seen.
Well, it is a pub. Anyway, so just what you're saying is just a couple of pints of stone and wood for now.
For now, and they're good friends, have been for several years, but hey, who knows? Down the track, when Darce gets a bit sick of commentary, who knows?
That's what Media Street's about. It's not just about...
tell the punters what's happening out there behind the scenes.
No, that's great. So radio ratings.
Yeah, they dropped late last week, and the first rating of the season is always a mixed one because it's half summer. Yeah, like a lot of the talent isn't back, but the most alarming stat, and I know your mate Craig Hutchison doesn't like ratings because he seems to ignore it and thinks that downloads, and I agree, the system is, there's clearly a lot of flaws in it.
It's an older system.
Traditionally, it's worth something.
The advertisers clearly still
look at it, although he claims it. Anyway, Jared Waitley, his primetime show, he was away for a lot of it. He did Super Bowl and he did the cricket, as we know, but his numbers got halved to 1.3, which 1.3 is like you, me, and a couple of dogs listening. So compared to a couple other like bizarre stations, 3RN, or they rate that. So even though Jared wasn't there for a significant part, that's an ugly number, no matter how you dress it up.
He'd have to be concerned. Just even at
well, Hutchie will come. I can tell you what Hutchie will say next week.
Please do.
He'll go, oh, you know, it's all about podcast downloads, and we'll get a email media release about, you know, breaking podcast download records, which is a whole other story in itself because you can do a little section and that's called a download.
Why don't we chop this one up then?
Well, ours is on fire. Well, it was since I arrived apparently.
Incredible second episode. The first episode was through the roof, so We're doing well.
You're doing very well. So, yeah, radio ratings are a bit of a interesting this week.
So in terms of objectivity and all those sort of things, we really need to wait for the next radio ratings to have a...
Yes, generally it's the full book is full footy season. That's when you can start having proper digs at it. But it's a pretty damning stat. And the other radio story was the much-hyped return.
Yes.
Tommy Morris. Put on hold.
Wasn't there.
He's playing cricket.
Tuned in Sunday crunch time. Sarah Oley, Tom Morris had been drilled in my head.
Yes.
2 months. Cal Toomey.
That was a world exclusive in the Herald Sun.
World exclusive. World exclusive.
Several weeks ago.
But it was Cal Toomey.
Yeah, Tommy, he was up front at the time, and I was aware that St Kilda, his cricket club, where he's a gun in the seconds, were playing in a semi-final. I don't even know if they won, so he might miss next week as well.
I usually check my cricket, but I haven't yet.
I know. So we'll check that in time for our column tomorrow. But, yeah, Tommy missing because of cricket.
And so the official column drops 12 p.m.
Yes, we had a special edition today.
Special edition today for the Duke. Is there any hints or whispers? Like anything you give me, or we got to wait?
Actually, there might have been some. Yeah, I think I've got one that's just come across the book. There might have been something to do with a Channel 7 commentator and access, but stay tuned for that one.
Well, we look forward to that, Scott. As always, thank you. And I think after this week, we'll have you on again. I reckon.
I can't believe Hutchie. I mean, Will, you've left me on. Thank you. I appreciate the time.
No dramas. Well, that'll probably do us for today's episode of the Footy Podcast. I'm your host, Will Hogan. Thank you to our guests, Mark Robinson, John Ralph and Scott Gullen. Head to heraldsun.com.au for all the latest football news and coverage this week. We have Media Street at 12 p.m. on Wednesday, live football from Thursday through to Sunday, before we delve into the biggest issues in Mark Robinson's tackle, Sunday night and in Monday's paper.